Hello and welcome to this month's edition of Sports Nutrition Update. SNU provides each of our listeners with current information on a wide variety of topics related to health, athletic performance, fitness, and nutrition. On track one, Corey will provide his commentary adapted from the Certified Sports Nutrition Advisor Education Program, current research data, and his clinical experience. On track two, he will be joined by Tracy Hawley on He Said, She Said, for her female focus on topics related to whole food, health, relationships, and raising healthy children. Track three features an interview with our special guest, who will share their expertise and experience in the healthcare, fitness, and sports nutrition field. Here is Corey Hawley and this month's presentation of Sports Nutrition Update.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Sports Nutrition Update, Volume 7, Number 7. Last month, I finished my series of discussions on the multiple benefits of whey protein isolate, HMB, glutamine, and creatine. We examined all their properties. We need to come to terms with these substances that we put into our body. And I think the first thing that comes to mind is that they're orthomolecular. They exist inside the body. Whey protein isolate isn't made inside the body, but the amino acids that it provides, some of them are made inside the body. Some of them we need to obtain. They're called essential amino acids. But HMB and glutamine and creatine, they're all made inside the body. So right off the bat, we know that they're relatively safe. Then we need to know how much we can take of them before they go over the other side of that bell curve. You know, at the bottom of the bell curve, if you turn that bell upside down, at the bottom on the left, that's when substances are deficient. And we raise them up to the top, and right at the top level is where they're consumed in an ideal dose. Now, when we consume them beyond that, it goes over the bell-shaped curve down the other side, and that's when you get into toxicity. So with everything, there is an LD50, a lethal dose, at least almost everything, because a lot of nutrients that are biological are so safe that they don't even know what the lethal dose is. Vitamin C, for example, is so safe that in order to die from taking it, you'd have to literally choke on the powder as you were infusing it down your throat. But there are other nutrients like selenium and iron that are by far more toxic, relatively speaking, and yet also essentially required. So as you delve into this stuff, it gets more and more confusing and yet more enlightening as you begin to put the pieces of the puzzle together, and that network of systems biology starts to frame in your mind the frame that's like building a house, and you can see the thing forming as you continue working as a framer. Now, in this edition, I'd like to begin a new series and detail the technique and influence of what I think are the three most basic and essential compound movements in the gym, specifically the squat, the deadlift, and the bench press. I've always loved these exercises. I've always embraced them based on the principle that the harder the exercise, the more productive it is, but the higher the risk also tied in with doing them incorrectly. So I'm going to try and take you through what I think is excellent technique as it relates to the squat today. And then in the next two editions, we'll go through the deadlift and the bench. And I want to tell you that I've been working with a couple of great students, Aaron and Fred. And the reason I say that they're great is because they're highly intuitive. They're excellent responders. They pay attention. They listen. They apply the information. But they're ectomorphs. And I've been giving them tutorials to follow and to listen to and videos to watch and taking them to the internet and on the phone, giving them insight as to how to do the exercises right, how to eat well, and do the things that need to be done for the ecto to put on the mass. Just like Joel that we mentioned in this month's edition of He Said, She Said. There's an example of an ecto who's doing what he needs to do, and he's doing it, and this is the key word, consistently. And if you keep doing what needs to be done, eventually the body will adapt. It has to. And if you feed it well and rest it well, it will grow. It will stay well because it's designed to. And that's the beautiful thing. We could all hang on to that universal immutable principle. The body is designed to be well. So let's start with the barbell squat the king of all exercises. Now, the main muscles that are worked in the squat are what are known loosely as the quadriceps, named for their four heads of origin. The muscle originates in four separate areas on top of the thigh, where you've got your large femur below, and the divisions are given four different names. Let's see if you can name them off. The rectus femoris, the vastus lateralis, the vastus medialis, and the vastus intermedius. The medius is the one I sometimes forget, the vastus intermedius, but I usually can remember the rectus femoris, the vastus lateralis, and the vastus medialis. So anyway, these separate divisions eventually blend together to form the powerful quadriceps tendon, which attaches to your shin just below the kneecap, where you can feel a prominent bump. So look down on your leg below your knee and look for that bump, and that's where that tendon is attached to your shin bone and then runs up high, forming the muscles, the quadriceps that we just discussed. And remember that all muscles are attached to tendons, and sometimes you hear about guys on steroids where the growth of the muscle exceeds the tendon capacity to withstand the stress, and it rips the tendon right off the bone. Talk about pain. Not something that I want to experience. Now, some of the other muscles worked, and we're not going to go into detail and name them all intrinsically, but we got the lower back, you know, the erectors that run along the spine and the back, all the way down to the pelvic bowl, the spinal column, the hamstrings, the calves, and the glutes. They're all involved in squatting, and in fact, there's something like 273 muscles that contract when you squat correctly. So that's why it is called the king of all exercises. Let's talk about some of the benefits of squatting. Well, you can transfer the power that you build from squatting into any sport. When you squat correctly, it actually builds a strong frame from which you can build stronger, bigger muscles from. So I tell this to guys, if you want to build big arms, then squat. If you want to enhance your back and chest, squat. But they don't get that. How does that work? Well, it's because the muscular system works on a systemic level, and it's all connected, and this is part of the naturopathic health principle of natural medicine. It's a web. It's all interconnected. Sometimes conventionally thinking people kind of isolate parts of the body and forget that they're attached to organs and glands and endocrine systems, and this is the wonderful thing about natural medicine. It brings you to the whole. It brings you to all of the aspects that make up the complete person. Now, when you squat, you activate enzymes, you create an oxygen debt that's ginormous, and so you enhance the utilization of oxygen. Now, it's an anaerobic event. It's not like walking or running long distance. Squatting, deadlifting, benching to build power and strength, it's about anaerobic chemistry. So learning about that and how you use glycogen as a principal fuel source, and then combining that with, say, swimming or other aerobic activity. How beautiful is that? But I think that you'll notice that the sprinters in the Olympics, when you watch the Olympics and watch those sprinters, they are all great squatters. They don't do a lot of thigh extension and leg curls. They might do a little bit to supplement the compound movement of squatting, but really, squatting is what it's all about. So the benefits are multiple. Now, it's a compound exercise. It works more than just the quads, as we mentioned. You've got your back holding the bar, and that weight is coming through you, and there's a line of gravity that's relatively straight. So this is why when you squat correctly, you must squat so that the line of gravity, starting with where the bar is positioned below your neck, on your back and your traps, is going through your upper body as close as possible to your hips and pelvis, not leaning forward so that there's a tremendous load on the lower back, which causes damage. That's a very common problem in squatting, in that people too soon, too fast, add too much weight. You know, more weight equals more strength and the rest of it. Well, that's not true when you get injured. So if you lean forward, you'll notice, if you could see yourself videotaped from the side, that that line of gravity is going through your shoulders over top of your knees, and that's not good. You want to go through the thickness of your body and keep that weight tight. Now, getting under the bar, when I approach the bar and I'm going to squat, I look at that bar, I put my hands on the bar, I think about what I'm going to do, I center myself, I duck under the bar, I'm squeezing the bar with my hands, and then I position the bar on the meat of my lower traps. And the lower that you can get that bar, the better. Now, some people have asked me, is it okay to use a towel or those spongy deals that they have in the gym? And of course they are, until you build up some meat on the traps. But I like the feel of steel. I like the coldness of metal on my skin. And there's kind of a macho element to that, perhaps. But there's a contact with your body. And you want, again, I've always said this, the secret of steel is to bring the metal into the body. Put your mind in the steel. So you fuse the iron into your body and you move like one. You're not separate. The enemy, again, is not the bar, it's not the metal, it's not the weight, it's gravity. That's what you're pushing and pulling against, and you've got to understand how it works. So getting under the bar is important. Take your time. Don't rush into it. Now, once the bar is positioned correctly, I lift it up, and you've got to have the standards that you're holding the barbell on slightly lower than where you're going to have it on the back of your traps, so that when you stand up under it, it lifts the bar off and you don't bang into the standards as you're stepping backwards, because, my goodness, we don't want to fall over. Now, as you step back, you take one or two steps back. Your hand spacing from that point can be nice and tight. Some powerlifters like to bring their hands over top and squeeze nice and tight. That makes the whole body nice and tight. On the other hand, I like to push my hands all the way out to the end of that Olympic bar, put my thumbs over top of the actual barbell, and then get a feel for balancing that barbell, almost like you're walking a tightrope and you need to balance. So balance here is very important, and hand spacing and how you center the bar across your back is critical. You got to make sure that you've got equal amounts of the barbell on each side when you're looking straight in the mirror. And remember, use that mirror. Use the mirror to determine the quality of your lift. And I'll mention this throughout, how important it is for a bodybuilder, for a strength athlete, for any athlete who's weight training, to use the mirror as a guide, as an advisor, to check and recheck your technique. So the foot position, how important is that? Well, I'm really big on foot position. I'm looking down now. I've got the barbell across my back. My hands are positioned correctly. I look down at my feet, and they are pointing neither in towards each other or out, but they're perfectly straight. So the inside of each foot runs parallel to the other, and the distance is the same distance as my hips at the top. Not too wide, not too narrow. Now, some powerlifters go a lot wider. They're able to manage more weight. I'm training for form and function and mirror muscle. So a nice, deep, clean squat with the foot position. And this is the same foot position that I use whenever I'm standing, whether I'm doing barbell curls, whether I'm doing deadlift. I always like to have this position. The knees are over top of the toes as they go down. And I'm going to mention the knees here because as you sit down into the squat, it's like you're sitting down on a chair, but there's no chair there, your knees have to remain the same distance apart. There's a tendency when your inner thigh is weak for them to cave in towards each other. And this is what you can do now using the mirror as a guide. Look at the mirror and watch your knees and concentrate on not allowing the knees to come together. If they buckle up, they're going to cause some damage. And over time, if you take your time, if you use the appropriate amount of weight and you're not in a race and your ego was hung on a nail outside the gym before you walked in, then you're going to be fine, because, again, technique is by far more important. And once you get the technique down, then you're on your way to building a healthy, strong body. The instep flexibility is huge, and this is where stretching comes in. And one of the stretches that I do, I call the anchor. I lean forward, pulling that foot towards the shin, and that flexibility combined with calf raises all the way down and all the way up to maximize my flexibility is huge. And whoever said that building muscle causes inflexibility is completely wrong. When you train through a full range of motion and you have load, you're going to maximize your flexibility, not decrease it. The problem with some guys is they get so gronky and so big and they use steroids, their muscles get so big and disproportionate that the muscles literally get in the way when they bend their arms, so it looks like they have lost their flexibility. When in actuality, if you say if you're doing a dumbbell press, lower that weight all the way down and push it all the way up, you're maximizing your muscle stretch. Now, lower back weakness is common in problems associated with the squat. The lower back gives out before the legs do, and that's because there's no core training. And gymnasts and a lot of athletes and hammer throwing, my goodness, I learned how to strengthen the core because that's what it pulls from. That's what maximizes your gravitational flow of energy as you're spinning that hammer around. Centrifugal force and centripetal force. Anyway, the lower back needs to be worked separately when you train your core on an off day. And that's a given, like you train your abs, your intercostals, your serratus, your entire core. I call it walking around the core. You train your entire core throughout the course of 1 or 2 weeks. Now, the depth of the squat. Isn't this interesting? I met Tommy Platz recently, who was known for his incredible leg development. And if you go on the internet, there's some actual YouTube comparisons showing who had the best legs in the world. And it's hard to decide, but I'm telling you, Tommy Squat had some of the best thighs and quads in the world. That guy squatted rock bottom in bare feet for years. Now, this is what I would teach a young person today. I would teach them to train all the way deep, taking their time starting off with body squats with their own weight, because this will maximize cartilage and connective tissue development. There is a genetic component of stretch and range of motion here, but I do want you to break parallel. In powerlifting, it doesn't count if you don't break parallel. And for development, you are incompletely squatting if you do not break parallel. It's just like you're sitting on a chair, then you go another inch or two. I like to go as far down as I can. And now here's where the breathing comes in. You want the oxygen inside for the power to push up against gravity. The easiest part is to lower the weight. You want to lower it in control and take advantage of some of that eccentric contraction value. That's the negative. That's the lowering of the weight. Okay, so we breathe in as we lower the weight, getting ready to explode. And as we break parallel, we drive it up as fast and as hard as we can against gravity. We explode. And at the same time we explode, we release the power inside from our diaphragm and our lungs. And that assists us in the explosive power. It's like a spaceship taken off through the atmosphere with the payload, and this is where nutrition comes in. Your muscles have got to be full of glycogen because this is anaerobic, and you've got to have aerobic conditioning, and this is where sprinting and interval training and hill climbing comes in to assist you, not so much in strength, but in oxygen utilization, filtering that stuff through the lungs, through the pulmonary system, into the cells, because oxygen is the key, and you haven't got a lot of it. This is where creatine and glutamine and ribose come in as accessory items to help you with your performance of the squat. The effect of the knees. Well, people blame squats and everything else on knee damage, but it's simply not true. It's interesting, when I've traveled throughout the world, people go to the bathroom in a squatting position. They don't sit on a toilet. This is one of the reasons why people have knee problems. And one of the reasons why they don't have knee problems in these Aboriginal communities, because they squat all the way down. And what it does is, when you're squatting going to the bathroom, number two in the bush, what it does is distributes the load from the rear end and the anus throughout the muscular system. It takes the load, instead of when you're sitting on a can, straining at stool, you end up with, you got it, the big H, not Holly, the hemorrhoids. So hemorrhoids are not a pleasant experience, and squatting in the gym is actually synonymous to building a healthy, functional body when it's done right. Most people don't squat correctly. That's why they blame their health problems on the squat. Most coaches don't teach it correctly, and most coaches get you doing thigh extension, which, as Colgan points out, is not a good exercise for function. It is good for building mirror muscle, but mirror muscle alone is going to get you in trouble without the function as a backup. So the tempo is another big factor. How quickly should we lower the weight? In control, and also driving it up. And as you move through your repetitions and reach fatigue, whether it's a set of 6 or a set of 12, you want to start increasing mentally the speed at which you raise the weight. But in fact, because you're getting tired and lactic acid and hydrogen is building up, you're going to start actually slowing down. So you want to try and push faster up as you reach a state of fatigue. And in actuality, you get to the point where you can't even hardly move it. Remember those standards, those safety poles on the side. Make sure that you're squatting in a squat rack, which, by the way, happens to be probably the single best piece of equipment that I would recommend for a home gym. And at a later time, I'm going to go into detail on what I think an ideal home gym can be, perhaps better than anything you can imagine. And I'm getting tremendous ideas from going in and out of hundreds of gyms here on this U.S. tour. So I think that I've kind of wrapped up all the major points that I wanted to on the squat. And next month, I'm going to review the deadlift, second to none in terms of actual muscles that engage to handle that force that is generated in that lift. It actually exceeds the squat in number of muscles that are engaged, and actually also leads every other single exercise in the gym in terms of growth hormone release, which I didn't mention on the squat. When you train with intensity with sets of 3 and 6, you get a great growth hormone release. You raise testosterone. You don't deplete it like you would in a long distance run. So there again is another great advantage of squatting. Growth hormone release to keep us young, to keep the immune system strong, to offset the decline of growth hormone as we age, and other adrenal hormones like DHEA, which, by the way, happens to be a great product if you're, say, 45 and over and interested in being lean and healthy and strong. Well, that's it for this segment of SNU. Thanks for listening, and here's a little poem I found on the internet. Down the road in a gym far away, a young man was heard to say, "No matter what I do, my legs won't grow." He tried leg extensions, leg curls, leg presses too, trying to cheat these sissy workouts he'd do. From the corner of the gym where the big guys train, through a cloud of chalk in the midst of pain, where the big iron rides high and threatens lives, where the noise is made with the big 45s. A deep voice bellowed as he wrapped his knees. A very big man with legs like trees. Laughing, he snatched another plate from the stack, chalked his hands and monstrous back, said, "Boy, stop lying and don't say you've forgotten. Trouble is with you, you just ain't squattin'."